And we are back with episode 249 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, who is very happy there's an Amazon.co.uk.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, back from all my different travels and hijinks to entertain you.
That's good. Yes, and we are going to be definitely, I hope we're going to be entertaining because, we're getting towards the end of the fall's part of the season. And as always seems to happen between Thanksgiving and Christmas, or the holidays at the very least, we get into a bit of doldrums when it comes to new material. And so we definitely are seeing a less material for us to be talking about, let's put it that way. And certainly as I'm looking down the horizon, we're going to be running into a few situations like this. But it also occurs to me that it's been a while since we've been able to just kind of cut loose and talk about anything that we want to, just get random and do a bit of a roundtable. And certainly there's been a lot going on the last few months. You know, natural disasters and various travelings, and I think that the last few months has been the largest number of shows where we've had somebody not be around because of work or travel.
Yep.
in the history of the show, which granted is only a little over 2 years, but still, the last few months we've had a lot of times when it's just been three of us rather than all four, which. That's the way it goes sometimes, but again, there's only three of us here for this show, so there you go.
Ron Stum always tries to steal my ideas anyway, so that's
okay. I guess so. But normally, when we were doing this in the past, we would just be recording anyway and just kind of talking and recording what we were talking about, so it's essentially what's going to happen here. Edmund usually gives a disclaimer, but I'll just go ahead and say it. We're probably going to be talking about movies, books, other shows, video games, whatever, and so there's always the potential that we're going to be spoiling something, so just be aware if we start talking about something. We'll try and be good and at least tell you what we're talking about before we spoil you rotten, but just be aware that this is one of those times when we're probably not going to be able to give you as much of a spoiler warning as we usually do.
No.
Because we're going to be kind of jumping all over the place, because that's just kind of how it goes, as you can tell already, I'm sure. But yeah, wow, Gary, it's been, I don't know the last time that you actually were able to do a round table with us.
Yeah, no, it's been a while. I think it was before we met up in New Jersey, if I recall correctly. So it's been a while, and that was fun. I finally, along with Edmund now, I've met everyone that I've been talking to every weekend for several years now. So it's nice to finally put, you know, faces with names and things like that. And it was really fun to meet you, and I do appreciate it. So taking time out to meet up with you.
Oh yeah, no problem.
It was a lot of fun. I do appreciate the poster you picked up for me from New York Comic Con. I've also picked up the artwork book that I think she ran out of there, so I was able to get that on Amazon finally, which was a lot of fun. As far as comic books go, I did pick up something over the Black Friday weekend digitally. I'm still picking up my main books, you know, in dead tree format, but when there's a book that I sort of am sort of interested in but really don't want to spend the money to go get it, or it's just something that pops up electronically, I'm starting to delve into the world of comic books over iPads, and it is a great presentation. The colors are probably more vibrant than the actual book itself is, and it's, you know, it's nice to be portable. I picked up the whole Dreadstar first series by Jim Starlin, which is it's a heck of a good read, and it's the artwork is crisp, clear, which is the type of style I usually prefer. And it was, I believe, 12 issues for $10. Most of the Dreadstar books still haven't quite hit the 50-cent bin. So they're usually still around a good $2-$3 a piece. So I thought it was a great deal to get it electronically. And I really enjoyed reading it. Another comic book surprise that took me off guard is I'm a very big Legion of Superheroes fan. I might not be in the top 10, but I'm certainly up there as far as people who enjoy the series, and I've been following it for over 30 years. They came out with a bunch of hardcover deluxe archive copy books around 99 through 2003, and they had a dozen of them. And they finally come out with issue 13, 9 years after the last book was published. I was really surprised. I never expected to see it to see anymore. And honestly, the archive series had sort of reached the point where it was nearly the same price, give or take a few dollars, to actually go out and buy the actual issues versus get the hardbound hardbound archive copy. So it was felt by many fans, and it's discussed in Legion fan circles and on certain boards that we, you know, that we're in, about where they actually did stop it at a reasonable point, because the average person can probably afford to buy it versus buy the hardcover book. So to have them actually come out with the issue 13 was a big jump. It was also the switch from Jim Shooter, who was a child prodigy doing scripting and outlines of the stories at age, I believe it was something around like 14.
Wow.
Yeah. From there, it jumped over to Paul Levitt's first run with the book. He's in the middle of his third run on the book currently, but this was his first run. And so it was, as I said, a heck of a surprise, a nice surprise to see. As far as other sort of books that I'm in, I'll stay in the publishing aspect. I'm currently reading through MVP by Scott Sigler. It's categorized as a young teen novel type of thing. And basically, to get this categorization, you basically have to leave out, you know, some sex, a certain level of violence, although people are getting killed and arms ripped off, so I don't know where that line is, and basically, you know, some language. But other than that, it's a reasonably adult storyline, and this is the fourth book in it. And I even got mentioned by name in the book, which was a nice surprise. I've known Scott for several years. I wouldn't go as far as friend, but we're definitely acquaintances, and we know each other by name, which is nice that someone as reasonably famous as Scott is knows who I am. So it was fun, and he at some point said he was going to put my name in a book, and I remembered him mentioning it, but I never really went out of my way until I started reading the book, and I got about 50, 60 pages in, and I read my name. I was like, ah! I was reading at night, and I woke my wife up. She's like, what's wrong? I said, I'm in the book. You know, I did a little happy dance, but it was really a thrill for me to see that he had done that for me. And one of the reasons I am burning through that book is because I just got the new Harry Dresden novel sitting on my table. And I usually keep a running sort of several books by my bed, and I finish one, move to the next, and so on. And so I almost caught up except for MVP, which I'm burning through to get through the Harry Dresden novel. So yeah, definitely lots of print and book media, as well as a little electronic I've been doing with right now. As far as, I guess, more in-person type of things, I got back from a trip to Disney World where they opened up the new Fantasyland, probably about two-thirds of it's open, and it's incredible. I mean, they've put a lot of work, a lot of money, and I guess this is supposed to be their answer to the Harry Potter area of Universal. I guess by its very nature, Disney has to be more younger kid friendly, and it definitely sort of is, as opposed to the Harry Potter land. They still did an exceptional job. The Belle areas where they do Beauty and the Beast are incredible. The interactive cartoon characters that they brought to real 3D life is amazing. I want to go up and touch it to better understand how it is that they're able to, in real space, capture these cartoon characters exactly. It's just incredible. There's a Little Mermaid ride. It's your standard sort of turnaround in a car type ride. It probably reminds you of the Haunted Mansion if you've ever been on there, with the obvious, you know, Little Mermaid theme. And it was very nice. It's extremely well done. You know, there's holograms and video screens and all sorts of different, you know, bits of showmanship to make it a good show. And then I guess my final sort of in-person thing was just this week. I went to go see the season 2 Next Generation Blu-ray release, I guess they call it. They do these things in movie theaters where, you know, they book, you know, one show time on one day, and they showed Measure of a Man, and what was the other one they showed? Oh, Q Who. And they have a little introductions by some of the cast members. John DeLancey did a little piece, as well as the director for Measure of a Man, which was the one where Data was seeing if he's a sentient being or not. And they added 20 minutes of extra footage to the episode. It was such a thrill to see new Next Generation that was produced during the period. It's not a new movie or anything like that. It's actual, you know, film shot during that time that I guess they decided to go a different direction. And you can see some of the reasons they did it as you watch the extra footage. But it was still so much fun to see new Next Generation footage after all these years. It was definitely nothing I expected. And they also included some blooper reel stuff and things like that. So I am looking forward to getting the Blu-ray editions. But as I said, it was quite a thrill to see new Next Generation after all these years.
Now, was that extra 20 minutes inserted into the episode, or was it just extras that they showed?
No, it was inserted in. And honestly, you know, from a production point of view, what happened? I can't help but wonder, and they didn't really go into it, at least in the presentation that was shown to me, of why there's that much extra finished, fully produced. You know, there was no missing special effects. There was no missing soundtracks. This was fully done audio, you know, video footage, and I have to wonder what happened to make them basically shoot an extra one third of an episode and then chuck it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't of poor quality, but you know, remember this was still season two, and Gene Roddenberry's aspects that Starfleet people didn't fight with each other. The conflict always had to be externally, or the person had to be possessed. But you know, Starfleet personnel usually didn't fight amongst themselves, at least this early in the, I guess you'd call it modern Trek as opposed to classic Trek. Later on they do, but Gene's ordinances were still pretty well in effect at this point, and that's pretty much what they removed. This is obviously Starfleet personnel, in a sense, going against Starfleet personnel on whether Data is sentient or not, and they were dancing a fine line to not have this sort of hostility between fellow Starfleet officers, and that is what was mainly cut out of there. It's not that it's horrible and they're not, you know, giving the finger to anybody, but it was definitely, there was an extra air of hostility. And
You see, now you start talking about Gene Roddenberry, and he starts getting a little bit crabby, and he starts to mess with the Google Hangout here.
Well, I know he wouldn't be thrilled with the whole Maquis storylines that came later on and stuff, because he did want these. He had a vision of the future that was very optimistic, and as we have, you know, some of our science fiction now, things so much seem to be focused on darker, grittier, and, you know, it's nice to think that the future can be, you know, better. People can get along with each other. And of course, everybody's not going to get along all the time, but why don't they get along most of the time? I'd like to think that we do improve a little bit over time. And I think that's sort of what, as I said, that's what they were addressing in some of these cutout scenes, was the conflict that Gene never wanted.
Mm, okay. Yeah. Now, is that the version that they're going to be putting on the DVD set? Do you know?
Yes, it is.
Oh, cool.
Now, so, I don't know if it's going to be an option to watch either or. Yeah, and it's one of those things, if you've seen this episode at all, it's not hard to point out, oh, there, you know, you can almost in a sense sense the added scenes. Like, I don't remember this at all before. This has to be an added scene. Right. And yes, that's exactly what it is. It stands out in that sense, not in any production quality, though, as far as lighting, as I said, sound effects, focus. It's all perfectly finished, you know, footage. So from a quality point of view, you wouldn't notice a difference. If you've seen this once or twice, and chances are, if you're a Star Trek fan, it'll stand out. So,
yeah, although that's interesting that they had that much extra footage.
I mean, I know. That's what surprised me. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel that my presumption would be they had to go in and do reshoots, because I know certainly on the original series, I mean, you know, David Gerald's book on writing Tribbles, it was like, you know, no, I mean, you know, there's a whole section in there where he has to go back and like cut parts of the script before they even get to production, because they know just based on the length, you know, that it's going to go long, and, you know, they can't afford the time and the money, basically. So, you know, I think with Next Generation being syndicated and not being, you know, on network and, you know, on the bubble all the time, you know, they probably had a little more leeway to, especially if Gene was saying, you know, no, this isn't right, you need to go back.
Yes, Gene at this point was still, he wasn't there on a daily basis, but I think he still overlooked things enough to say, I don't like this, and yeah, he had enough sway yet. His health, I believe it didn't pass till the end of the second season.
Yeah, exactly.
So there, he did still have input. He would still be there. I think it was like once a week. He wasn't allowed daily on the set, but he'd come once a week and overlook things and still, you know, criticize and correct them, much to, you know, to the chagrin of the what was going to be the ongoing management, you know, Rick Berman and other people like that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's exactly, you're saying what happened correctly. They went back and they probably had to redo several of the scenes, although they were still able to run in the episode and you didn't feel like they retread ground. But yes, they had to do a big rewrite is my guess.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it had been originally conceived as something of either a two-parter or a 90-minute episode or something like that, if it was finished footage, because like you said, usually if it's that long, it's obvious in the script,
I wish I had a better explanation, and I haven't actually gone to research it or anything along those lines yet. But yeah, there's obviously a story to this because, as you said, just the cost of shooting and finishing that footage had to be tremendous. So there had to be reasoning. Although they never did the first two-parter till the next year, season three, with Best of Both Worlds, and even that. While it is a two-parter, it was a season ending and a season open for season four. So in a way, they really didn't do that till about season four.
Yeah, that's
where,
true.
Where they had a double episode in a sense. So I don't think it was that. I think just Gene complained, then they redid it.
Yeah,
is my guess.
Well, I mean, definitely that's going to be a highlight of any anything that can help the second season Blu-ray set have a little bit more cachet, because I'd say that for Next Generation, the second season is probably the least interesting.
Riker does get a beard, so there is.
I suppose there's that, but we know that it was.
That's your highlight. That's yeah.
That's true, but that and they have. I guess for the whole Blu-ray edition, they have for all intents and purposes, all of the main cast, sitting in around couches. Interchanging different stories and things, and some of these are convention stories, as I like to call them. As you go to conventions enough, you see these, you see Patrick Stewart, you see Jonathan Frakes, you see Brent Spiner, and after a while, of course, it is a highlight for them. So they touch on this on a similar story or the same story more than one occasion, and it's not that they never have anything original, but they sort of have these core things that they do touch on, and there was some of that in there. So if you have never seen these guys in conventions, they do have these talking points where you will get a little bit of that convention feel when you watch the Blu-ray. So some of the bloopers I had never actually seen before, so they were really quite humorous as well.
Yeah, I mean, definitely I would say that the second season was the one that everybody feels was kind of their biggest work in progress. And they were still trying to find some kind of voice for the show.
Yeah.
Well, they were trying to make their own voice. So much of the first, season was made up of basically old Star Trek scripts. At least more than six or seven of the episodes were lifted from what was supposed to be the classic Trek Return to TV series.
Yeah.
And you can even relate several of the characters. Riker was supposed to be Decker. Ilya was, it was Troy. I mean, there's some, direct comparisons to where they were going to take the classic show if it had come back. And so come the second season, they really started to, start to get their legs. And by season three, they really got it down pat. But two more so than one, I think, was them finding their own legs.
I think that they probably got derailed more by the fact that not too many people remember this these days, but that they had a writer's strike going on that year.
Yes, and they do mention that as well. Yeah, there was several months where the person who wrote the Measure of a Man script, Melanie Snodgrass, I believe is her name, she talks a bit about length, and she mentions that too, that she came back after the writer's strike and figured the script that she had sent in was buried, so she had index cards with other ideas to pitch to them to hopefully sell a script so she can make money and put food on her table. And they're like, oh no, we're still going with that one. She didn't expect it after the strike, so.
Yeah, I know that it definitely had a big effect on the quality of the scripts, as well as the I think they actually had a shorter season than usual, and then they ended it on a clip show, as I recall, and it really left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. But
yeah, I think they shaved five or six episodes, I believe.
Yeah. But they were showing that here in this area, but unfortunately I couldn't go. But I'm hoping for the third season to definitely get out to one of these. Because
I hope they have it, because in my neighborhood where we got to see it, the crowd was half of what it was at the first season showing.
Well, I'm wondering if that's because it was the second season.
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, next season they have Best of Both Worlds, and I imagine that will probably be one of the episodes that they show. From the teasers, I'm thinking for season three they're going to show Yesterday's Enterprise and probably Best of Both Worlds would be my guess. Mm. So both very strong episodes, so that might draw more people out. And it's fun to see Star Trek on a big screen. I mean, just as a fan, it's, you know, you're sitting around a whole bunch of people who like the show. It's not like when you go to a movie and you don't know, you see a trailer or two and you don't know what it's going to be. And some people are less than enthusiastic and some people, just sort of like the actor, but not necessarily the story. You're surrounded by a bunch of people who know what's going to be on the screen, are looking forward to it. And they're laughing and they're giggling and clapping and moaning. And it's not quite a convention experience, but it's awfully close. You're among people who want to be there and see what they're mm-hmm. seeing, which isn't always the case with a regular movie. So I recommend it. It is a little on the pricey side. I believe my tickets were around $15 down here in Jacksonville, and I'm sure up by you, John, they're probably cracked 20 at least. But
the high teens sounded about right from what I recall. Oh, okay. I did look it up, and I was on the cusp of ordering tickets, but then it just – there was a conflict. So anyway,
but yeah, if any of our listeners do, I mean, I imagine they're going to at least do the third season and they might go the whole run. It's well worth a night out. You're going to watch something on TV that you can DVR and we'll tell you about it later if you miss it. And, but yeah, I definitely recommend going out and seeing it. It's really fun to watch it. And they're picking good episodes. And as I said, Will Wheaton talks during part of this because he was still a very prominent member of the cast season two, and it still amazes me how many people clap, laugh, and are glad to see him on the screen given the absolute hatred he had when these things originally came out. It's nice to, I guess, they were all kids like me and they can really identify with him, but I still remember such vitriol against him early on, and shut up, Wesley, kill Wesley. I mean, I remember the kill Wesley t-shirts going to conventions back in the day. And it's really nice to see how many people actually do love him and appreciate what he did on the show.
Yeah, it's interesting going back and looking at those days and thinking of Will Wheaton then versus now.
Well, he admits it as well that he was a pompous ass who didn't know any better back then. He apologizes for himself, but still, yeah. It was enjoyable, and I can't recommend it enough. Well, that's what I've been up to. How about you, Edmund?
Go ahead.
Side effect of me visiting, going to Comic-Con and actually being around a full-blown comics convention for the first time, now of course I'm not part of the Apple fraternity like you guys, but, I did get introduced to the whole concept of digital comics and, the Comixology app. And I have been using one of the Asus Transformer tablets, which also has a very handy little keyboard dock, which turns it into basically a netbook. And I've been having lots of fun playing around with that. At Comic-Con, I picked up kind of thin, so I don't know if you call it a trade paperback, but the first volume of Saga, Brian K. Vaughan's new series, mm-hmm. and really enjoyed that. And then got the... at least based on what's on Comixology, they're up to, I got issue 7, eagerly awaiting issue 8. Realized, wait a minute, I know I've been hearing that name. Then also have been picking up the trade paperbacks, although in digital form, of Why the Last Man. I've been hearing about for, years and years now. And, of course, there's, apparently the movie adaptation may, in fact, be on again. I'm into the second trade paperback of that and really enjoying that. That's a wonderfully offbeat concept of, basically virtually all the men on Earth falling dead and, what happens when, the women actually do take over and the different ramifications of that. And then of course the one snarky guy and his monkey who is, left behind. Desperately trying to get to Australia, or at least that's where I've gotten so far, so I'm sure it's going to go to all sorts of amazing places from there. Yeah, and the reason I was mentioning Amazon.co.uk is I had kind of been lost track of what Jimmy McGovern, the man behind Cracker back in the 90s, that amazing Robbie Coltrane, police psychiatrist, and also the movie Hillsborough about the tragic trampling of people at the Liverpool soccer stadium. And he made the movie about it, which basically finally got the government off its butt to investigate it properly and stop blaming the fans for what happened. It's actually just recently there's been the official mea culpa and apologies from both politicians and the tabloid press, who had raked a lot of innocent people over the coals and made their lives, heck, to keep it non-explicit. I discovered there are a couple of series that look very interesting that he did that I just got the DVDs from. I haven't had a chance to really delve into them much yet, but one is The Street, which is three series of six episodes, basically standalone dramas about what's going on behind the doors of this one street in this northern town. And some wonderful actors, actually a lot of the folks from the sort of Mike Lee repertory company, like Timothy Small and Jane Horrocks, and really wonderful acting, and in that typical Jimmy McGovern style, just sort of they're very gritty and realistic situations. And then the other one, which hasn't arrived yet, but I'm eagerly awaiting, is The Lakes, which was a series he did in the late 90s, which was kind of one of John Sims' real, one of the series that really put him on the map before he went on to Life on Mars and being the latest master. That's where he's, they say, a down-and-out gambler who has to get out of Liverpool and decides to go to the bucolic Lake District, one of the major tourist attractions in northern England. And, of course, in the hands of Jimmy McGovern, it's, there's lots of seamy stuff going on behind the scenes, so especially for a gambler trying to reform himself. As soon as the Royal Mail gets that to me, I'll be very interested to see John Sim about 15 years ago, before he became a huge star. Yeah, given all the comic stuff I've been delving into, book wise, I'm a little behind. I'm almost to the end of book three of Game of Thrones, so I can pretty much guarantee that yes, I will have actually read this one completely before the next season starts. That is, it's still as fabulous as it was, and I'm very in great anticipation for seeing Jaime Lannister rise to the fore more this season. So,
oh yes, that's one way of putting it. I'll leave it at that.
Exactly. There's the other thing which hasn't become a time sink yet, but it might. That I've also discovered that all these games John and Bronze Thumb love talking about are actually playable on the PC through the Steam app. So I do now own Assassin's Creed, and I'm not very far out of the monastery yet, but then I'm sort of been over 15 years since I did much of that, so I'm having to rediscover. It's like, how do the keyboard controls work and things? So, as I gain my facilities there, that is also looking like it is going to be a lot of fun. And yes, the graphics and storytelling have certainly advanced considerably since I was blasting through 30 levels of Doom in the 90s. So.
Yes, just a
bit. Oh, yeah, that's.
Yes.
And yet you say that, and yet my son is playing a game called Minecraft, which graphically looks exactly like Doom, yet it's the latest thing that all the kids are playing. I can't figure it out.
Not just the latest thing the kids are playing, but there's an entire community on the VOG network that is devoted to playing Minecraft right now. So.
And it's that 8-bit graphic. It's just a...
Yep. But yeah, wow, Assassin's Creed, yes, and I'm looking forward to playing Assassin's Creed 3 in about a month. I'll be getting that for the holidays. Yeah, I guess I'll kind of go back to what, Gary, you were talking about at the very start. I guess you started off with comics, and I mentioned this in the last show that we did, that I've been trying to get caught up on The Walking Dead. Because
that's quite a challenge, I would imagine. They're hundreds of books in at this point, aren't they?
They're up to 104 or 105, but every six six issues or so, they collect them in a trade or a hardcover, but actually it's the trades that the guy at work has. So, but
well, I've been reading that for that series, among other series, they've been selling. They sell more issues technically through trades than they do as standalone issues on the stand. So.
Right, and it, from what I can tell, the even if it wasn't that way originally, certainly since then, you know, since the first couple of years worth of issues, they've now been structuring it in such a way that it's, you know, 6-issue arcs.
Yes.
So that it's easier to collect into the trade. So if you want to get that chunk of the story every month, you can get the individual issues. But if you just want to be able to read the entire story arc through, you can do that in the trade. And I've been borrowing the trades as I go, and it's pretty quick reading. One thing that really surprised me, and I didn't realize this at all, but you know, the original comics are all in black and white.
Yes.
Which I didn't realize, as I said, and so it was a little odd, to say the least, because I'm so used to reading the digital comics, as you said, that, you know, the colors pop out right at you, and so much of the background art that's done, you know, they add in all of these digital effects over the pencils and inks these days, so that it's almost tailored to more of a screen than it is to the paper itself anymore. So it's kind of odd to go back to that a little bit, but I've really been enjoying it. It definitely gives me a much better sense of what they needed to do for the adaptation. And I really think that they've been very clever on the show, taking certain pieces from different storylines and melding them together. Because certainly I've noticed that more than anything, you know, things that they've changed up, things that they've rearranged, and it helps, as we've said in those discussions for The Walking Dead, to take away the predictability that I think a lot of people felt in the first couple seasons. But not to make this another Walking Dead show, but
and I agree with you. I have no problem with them taking liberties from either a comic book or novels when they adapt them. You know, you need to. There's, you know, I remember, I forget what writer it was. It's like, it's real easy for me to write as the hordes of tech laden soldiers cross the mountainside, looking as if they were a stream running through the rocks. He's like, I write that in a minute and a half. It probably costs $500,000 to shoot, though.
Right.
And so, I mean, you have to adjust it, and you have to expect that too. So,
and we definitely see that, you know, to kind of go back to what Edmund was saying, you know, the third book of Game of Thrones series, you know, that would be a bear to adapt word for word. You'd be spending billions just to get one scene down. So the adaptations definitely need to take place.
Yeah. I mean, we actually saw it in season 2. I mean,
the
version of Blackwater on screen was still, you know, fabulous and amazing, an amazing episode, you know, but was not, you know, it did not have the sweep of the book version and, you know, or even some of the tactics and, but it still worked fabulously.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, you've got to adapt it, hence the term, to the medium that you're going to be employing. And it, certainly you can do it very, very wrong, but then there are many examples of them doing it extremely well. But at any rate, so I've been spending a lot of time on that, especially over the holiday weekend, because we did not travel as much as we thought we were going to, so it gave me a lot of time to catch up. I've also been caught up with Saga. That's one of my personal favorites right now. I also enjoy a book, I've mentioned it before, called Saucer Country. It's a little bit offbeat, but I don't know if that's Vertigo or if it's, I think it is Vertigo, which is becoming more and more of the Fables imprint, but that's okay. Let's see, I just try and pick and choose here. On the Marvel side, I've really been enjoying what's been happening as they've had this post-Avengers versus X-Men thing going on. I've liked almost everything that they've put out from that. The one that really surprised me, because I usually hate the character, is the Deadpool book, which someone said, you've got to look at this because it's crazy. And certainly when I heard some of the stuff at New York Comic Con, I had to agree. But basically, he's been commissioned by S.H.I.E.L.D. on a special mission because somebody magically reanimated all the past presidents. And they're marauding the American countryside. And so you've got Deadpool taking out the reanimated zombie presidents that are, you know, doing all these really stereotypically ridiculous things. Like you've got Roosevelt, like, you know, going down the middle of Manhattan in his wheelchair, attacking people and spouting out, you know, "I'll give you a New Deal" and all this kind of. It's so just completely designed to just be as offensive as possible, but it's hilarious stuff. You know, you've got George Washington running around with an axe because he's going to chop down everybody, you know, because he had the cherry tree thing going on.
At any rate, he won't lie about it either, but
yes. Yeah, exactly. But it's just that kind of very offbeat and irreverent humor, and I kind of get that better than some of the forced stuff that you usually see with that character. On the book front, obviously, since I've been reading a lot of those things, I've been behind on the actual books. Other than that, I've really enjoyed, on the DC side, rather, current arc in the Batman books is called Death in the Family, or Death of the Family. And it's the return, or actually, one could say the first appearance of, the Joker in the New 52 continuity. And having not read too much of the Joker in the comics and being far more familiar with the incarnations on film, I have to say I'm really enjoying it. And from what I understand, there are a lot of people that feel like this is one of the more psychotic and disturbing depictions of the character in a while, maybe going back to stuff like The Killing Joke and all of that. So,
oh, I think it's even more so than that. They're doing a really good job with it. And I'm, you know, they even addressed it in continuity one time, how, you know, sometimes he's this really homicidal maniac and other times he's, you know, wearing a squirting flower, you know, right. And they've definitely taken him a turn. During one of the books, they have the Harlequin character even saying that, you know, even she's scared this time because he's so far gone. And it was really put a weight to it, I think, that might not necessarily have been there. But when one of his own henchmen or associates is saying that they're worried because he's so far gone, and they're warning Batman to be careful because of it, you know, that's very intimidating.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not going to give any spoilers about why he is doing what he's doing, because I think that the slow way that they're revealing just the depth of what he's trying to accomplish and why is one of the things that makes the story so good. It's just been really fun. And I guess over in the Green Lantern books, they're doing something called The Rise of the Third Army, which I guess would have a lot more impact if I had been reading the Geoff Johns stuff from the very beginning. But I still feel like it's an interesting story, and they're making a lot of changes. And I can tell that maybe you're not as thrilled with it as...
No, I think it's... I know, I think in a lot of ways it is a good storyline. The problem that I have is, and they seem to be doing it a lot, is I don't want to necessarily spoil it either, but needless to say, I don't think the Guardians are acting in character at all, and they're so far out of character that I don't see how they can salvage them.
Mm.
They're taking them down a path where the Guardians are going to have to be out of the picture, and I sort of enjoy the Guardian structure. Yes, it might be a little too sedate to create conflict or tension, but I'd always enjoy the structure, so I'm not looking forward to how it's going to shake out when everything's done.
And that's interesting, because certainly I know that Brad over at Pod Culture is a huge Green Lantern fan. I'd love to know what he thinks, although from his snide side comments about the New 52, I'd have to say he's probably not too thrilled. But it seems to me that, you know, Geoff Johns has been more or less shepherding that side of the DC.
And obviously, in a sense, Green Lantern has never went through the 52 reboot, at least to no substantial degree. They've been, you know, pretty much going on, or if you want to consider them having rebooted a year and a half ago, as opposed to, you know, rebooting just recently. So
yeah,
they've been doing a great job. It's pretty much missed most of the hacking, I guess I'd like to say, that has occurred through some of the other major characters. So he's been doing a really good job, and that's the only thing that sort of gives me hope that in the end things will work out. And I mean, I sort of see where they possibly could go, but he has thrown in a few surprises in the past, so I'll be curious to see how things turn out in the end. But to shake up, without giving too much weight, to basically shake up the whole core structure, I don't want to go back to a one Green Lantern universe. So I hope there's, there's more than just a handful left when everything's said and done.
Yeah, I guess having not been reading DC at all before the last year or so, it the differences or the changes are not as startling to me, and it doesn't seem so inconsistent, but, you know.
Well, it's just that, you know, I think that the concept of a universal police force is something that can be worked with without making them necessarily seeming all powerful, and that they can never have, you know, any real weakness to any extent. I think they can have many weaknesses, and I enjoy the variety of characters they're able to quote pull out of the army, you know, for different reasons. And a lot of people feel that it's just too open and too powerful, and that to tell a good story, it needs to just focus on, you know, a few people, and you can't have anybody else. I think that's a misnomer, and Jeff Johns has done a reasonably good job with a large cast of characters, and I'm hoping that when everything's said and done, we'll still have equally a large cast of characters.
Mm. It would seem that way, because how you could lose you know, all the characters that are out there when you've got four or five books that are hinged on this.
Well, I agree. However, I've lived a world of one Green Lantern. I've lived a world of six Green Lanterns, and I've lived a world of 7,200. And I like the larger numbers better. I still think you can tell quality stories without killing off, you know, thousands of law enforcement officers. But that's just me.
That's true. Well, that's where I am in the comics. You know, the rest of DC is I'm kind of hot and cold on.
Have you checked out Aquaman? I feel they've been doing incredible work with that series.
Oh, I have to say that's one that I kind of looked at it just because it was rebooting, and I just wanted to see what it was like. And again, this is a Jeff Johns book. It's one of the few outside of the Green Lantern books that I guess he's doing. He's also doing Justice League, but Justice League has been very disappointing for the most part.
It's always been a hard book. It's hard to bring power levels up and down and create, you know, some sort of common need for Superman versus Batman to both need to do something. It's always been you know, ever since the beginning, that it's always been difficult to join the characters together.
Yeah.
Usually Superman gets dumbed down, Batman gets raised up to make it work. But
at any rate, the Aquaman one though. I love the fact that they, you know, when they rebooted it, they started off with him really challenging the fact that he was seen and perceived as this as a bit of a joke to the entire world, and it was that meta discussion of really that's how a lot of people feel about the character. But then for him to kind of prove out that he is in fact just as powerful in his own way, and then the current storyline that they just wrapped up with this other team that he was working with was really good and kind of dark in many places, and that's one that I look forward to. I know that they just had another issue out I guess this week, and I haven't quite gotten to it yet. But
and in the past, just historically, having followed this character, typically they manage to do about a dozen good episodes on him, and then something happens where either a writer changes, or honestly it feels like they just run out of ideas of what to do with the character, and then he peters off and his books die out. So I'm hoping they can break past that and, you know, continue on with a good storyline for him. I know they're crossing over with Justice League actually in the next few episodes, comic books. So I hope that'll actually draw more people to his book. I think it will, because it's really quality work. So I can hope.
Yep. Yeah, I definitely agree. But since most of my comic stuff has been neglecting my pull list for in favor of The Walking Dead to try and catch up, that, you know, I've been kind of slow going getting to everything. I'm sure that there are other things that I was going to talk about that I've forgotten about, but we'll have other opportunities. In terms of books, though, right now, I've actually had a good run lately. A couple weeks ago, I was reading the third book in the revised Chung Kuo sequence called The Middle Kingdom, and it was really neat to go back, because I think I've talked about this series before. It's written by David Wingrove, and he wrote an 8-book series back in the 90s that was supposed to be a 9-book series and then got cut to 8 because the publisher basically dropped out. And it never really ended well. It was rushed, and it went kind of wonky towards the end because of that. And the author kind of always wanted to go back and do kind of the director's cut version.
Mm-hmm.
And so he hooked up with a small press, and now the original 9-book cycle has now become a 20-book cycle. shorter books, not quite the length as before. But what he's basically doing is taking those original few books where he had started out the way that he wanted to, and he's building the structure around it. So some details have changed. There's these two books that he already put out that were prequels that put a lot of backstory behind it, which was actually a good thing. But this book is, I would say about 90% of it is the material from that original version, just slightly revised. So it was interesting to see just what I remember. You know, it's like you were saying with that episode of Next Generation. You know, you've got what you remember of the original story, and then you've got this new version that has extra material in it, and some details might have changed, and you can kind of see where the seams are, but in other cases, it's not quite so obvious. So that was good to kind of get that out. And it's difficult. It had been difficult to find copies of it because it was only being published in the UK. But thankfully, Amazon over here has the ebook rights, I guess. And it's now very available. In fact, you can get the ebook version here for less than $10, which is not bad when you consider the exchange rate.
Oh, no.
But if you try to get the hard copy of it, it's extremely expensive because it's such a limited run because it's a small press. But it's one of those types of things that I highly recommend that people go back to the first book of this new reimagining and read it. It's very dark, but it's some good stuff. Coming right out of that, though, after taking a little bit of a breather, there was the aforementioned new Dresden Files book, which I'm quite a bit into now. And boy, was I looking forward to that, and it hasn't disappointed yet.
La, 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 la.
Exactly. I'm not going to say anything. Just a reminder that, you know, when it comes to the Dresden Files universe, you just got to remember that dying isn't necessarily an unpleasant circumstance in that particular world. But anyway, and then the reason that I started talking about the Trunquo books is that they had started off very slowly, but now every few months another one is going to come out. And I didn't realize this but until I got the message from Amazon, but book 4 came out today. So as soon as I'm done with the Dresden Files book, I can jump back into that other series and get the fourth book in. So I'm really looking forward to that. And then, of course, as many people may be aware, anyone who has been reading the Wheel of Time books since back in the 90s when they first started, I think that the first book might have actually come out in the 80s. The final volume is finally coming out in January. Book 14 is coming out in January, and I have yet to read book 13. I got up to 12, and then I've been reading other stuff. So after I get done those other couple books, I want to try to get book 13 in so that I am ready for the big finale. So that's kind of where I'm going to be going in terms of my reading material. And then I've got a large stack of media tie-in books that I've been kind of accumulating. A couple of them are now signed versions from New York Comic Con, but and so I will have to write up some kind of reviews on those as promised to the authors. And of course, I'll be talking about all of these books that I've just mentioned in reviews that'll go up onto the VOG Network website in time. I'm in a bit of a queue. So as far as Edmund, you mentioned some video game stuff, and yes, I'll be playing Assassin's Creed 3 soon, but to kind of bring us back to The Walking Dead again, because you can't get too far from that, there are a lot of people that are calling this the game of the year, but Telltale Games put out an episodic Walking Dead game, and the final chapter came out just before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally played that in one night, the final episode. I just couldn't stop. It was something like 1:30 in the morning when it finally was over. But I just couldn't let it go. I just had to see it through. And I have to agree, it was definitely one of the best games I've played in a while. And it's not your conventional like action-type game. It's more of it's definitely character-driven, and it's all based on your choices. There is some action, but it's all very the action is done a little bit differently, so it's not like an action adventure type thing. It's a lot more engaging. You have to kind of work through it, and you're definitely playing the characters. I would recommend it to anybody. It is up on Steam.
Yes, I know.
Edmund. You can get it on iOS. It's mm-hmm. for the iPad, Gary. but yes, the amazing thing is
Not only was it up on Steam, it was also a Black Friday weekend special. So yes, it's sitting in my queue too.
There you go. Yes, Steam had that weekend special on Thanksgiving, and they got a lot of my money. Or I shouldn't say they got a lot of my money. I got a lot of game for very little money.
Exactly.
I got at least 5 games that normally would cost $60 for the PS3 or 360, and that literally, I think if I added it all up, it's something like 200 hours worth of gaming, and I think I spent maybe $10. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah. This is an Steam commercial, but you can go over there and get the Walking Dead game, and this is going up for, there are a lot of awards going out for Game of the Year right now on different sites, and it is in the running in, I think, every single one of those sites. Everybody is saying that this is going to end up being the Game of the Year. And you can think about things like, you know, Assassin's Creed 3 came out, Halo 4 came out, all these other games that are big, you know, Call of Duty games that everybody raves about. But this one, which was basically a download game on PSN or on the iOS or whatever, and this one is blowing everybody away. And in fact, if you go back and, you know, I said this before, it was playing that game on some, because it was free. The first episode was free, and I just did it on a lark. That's what drew me into the rest of it, because I recognized how character-centric everything was.
Absolutely.
And it definitely pulled me in. But since then, I've been playing, it's been on my shelf for a little while. And I did not play more Mass Effect because the Mass Effect trilogy came out, and so I'm going to wait and get that for Christmas so that I can play the optimized version on the 360. But I'm playing right now Final Fantasy 13 Part 2, and having a really good time playing that. The irony is that my wife and kids kind of roll their eyes at me when I play these games because they're extremely Japanese, and they're just kind of goofy in that way. But another game that I had downloaded because it was on a deep discount on PlayStation Network was a game called Costume Quest. I guess this game's about a year or two old, but basically it's like a Halloween type game where kids dress up in costumes and go trick-or-treating, but it's played like an RPG. So their costumes are kind of the, you know, identities that they take on. So if you, say, dress up as a knight, now you have the abilities of a knight. And then you're fighting monsters that are, you know, invading your neighborhood because it's Halloween, and so the monsters are real. And I'm watching my wife play this game, and she's having the greatest time playing it today. And I'm going, this is the exact same mechanic in the game I'm playing that you mock me when I'm playing it. It's the same thing. It's just, you know, a different presentation. And she's like, yeah, but this is hilarious and fun. Yours is just weird. Oh, thanks, dear.
Ah, the love, yes.
Yes, the millions of Japanese are now glaring at you, but that's okay. You can't tell because they're in Japan. But yes, but there's those games that are really good. And of course, I'm also looking forward to just the other day, I guess, Ratchet & Clank Full Frontal Assault came out on PlayStation Network. So we love that franchise. It's a lot of fun, and the kids can play it as well because it's kind of at their level. So looking forward to getting into that. So there's a lot of good things coming out right now to play. And of course, sooner or later, I've got to come around to playing all those things that are on Steam that are sitting here on my computer and haven't quite gotten to yet. But oh yeah, and in the middle of that, I, you know, have work and stuff going too. Oh, yeah. But thankfully, no big trips coming, as far as I know, between now and the end of the year. I think in January I'll be taking another shot out to Texas, though. So.
Oh, but Mulgrave would be so nice in January.
Well, it's funny because they're actually coming to us this coming week. Actually, they will be in my office on the day that this gets released. So there you go. They know where to go. Wait, it's winter? We're going south. But yes, so it's definitely gearing up for the holiday season. So we have lots of other things that we get to catch up on, lots of shows, and of course, not long from now, we've got a big film coming out, I believe. So,
oh, well.
Looking forward to that.
A big film about little people?
Big film about little people, yes. So I would definitely expect that we are, as the TV season kind of takes a pause, that we will have a lot more opportunity to have discussions like this about other things. And definitely looking forward to it. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter @Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for this show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...